bugged me most in the jungle? In a word, the bugs.
Do you want to be happy today? The Bible says that a happy person finds wisdom and gets understanding. But it warns us that wisdom of this world is foolishness in God's sight. But the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Elizabeth Elliot has spent decades helping women understand the wisdom of the Bible. Welcome to Gateway to Joy. Be challenged to live wisely as you hear once again from your friend, Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you this time about what bugged me most in the jungle. We've been telling the story of my daughter Valerie and me going in to live with the Alca Indians of eastern Ecuador. There were a good many things about our conditions there that were not exactly ones which I would have chosen, but there were a lot of things that I really loved about it, and one of them was having an open fire all the time in our house. I really didn't mind at all cooking on that open fire with the pot just sitting on the ends of the three logs, but there were some times when I would like to have had an oven where I could have baked bread or had a frying pan with some grease that I could have fried something in, but I didn't have that. I just had one pot. But it was nice to have that fire there day and night. I came across a most remarkable piece in The New Yorker telling about the necessity of fire for certain kinds of foliage and brush. And this is what I read. Fire nourishes and rejuvenates chaparral, the impenetrable brush, prickly, thick, and dry, and a good deal tougher than tundra, that covers the lower slopes and canyons of California's mountains. There are seeds which fall into the soil, stay there indefinitely, and listen to this, will not germinate except in the aftermath of fire. There are basal buds that sprout only after fire. Droughts are so long, rains so brief, the dead bits of wood and leaves scarcely decay. Instead, they accumulate and thicken until the plant community is all but strangling in its own duff. The nutrients in the dead material are being withheld from the soil. When fire comes, it puts nutrients back in the ground. It clears the terrain for fresh growth. When chaparral has not been burned for 30 years, about half the thicket will be dry, dead stuff, 25,000 tons of it per square mile. Did you get that? 25,000 tons per square mile? Most chaparral plants are full of solvent extractives that burn intensely and ignite easily. Their leaves are glossy with oils and resins that seal in moisture during hot, dry periods and serve the dual purpose of responding explosively to flame. I read somewhere else that the seed cones of the lodgepole pine will open only with intense heat. Often we think of fire as being totally destructive, and yet we know the advantages that it has for us to heat our houses and to cook our food. I had never realized the tremendous advantages that it has to certain kinds of seeds and certain kinds of plant life. But what bugged me most in the jungle? Well, in a word, the bugs. If there was one thing that tried my sanctification, what little there was of that, it was those bugs. But thank God, we only had to put up with bugs 12 hours a day, not 24. Not that we had screens, not that we had repellents, really, because we lived so far away from civilization that we just couldn't keep a supply of things like that, and with no walls on your house, you can't very well put screens up. But the bugs, for some reason, graciously stopped biting about 6:15 in the evening as the sun went down, and they didn't start again till the next morning. So I was very thankful for that. But during the daytime, I spent a good bit of time scratching my bug bites. I used to get these wonderful letters from people who had never been in the jungle. My mail was often dropped to me by parachute, and people would write things like, "Oh, what a wonderful job you're doing. How marvelous it is that you're living there with those Alcas who killed your husband, etc., etc." And I thought, if these people could see the way I'm spending my time. I mean, sitting here in my hammock, scratching the bug bites, trying to get the smoke out of my eyes, cleaning my fingernails because I'm always getting them jammed with dirt because of having to keep the fire going all the time. My hair started turning red because of living in the smoke. Smoke in the eyes, mud on my feet, dirty nails, monkeys, bats, snakes coming into my house. I wasn't by any means a saint. I was not unmoved by these things. When I was a college student, the word identification had a sort of romantic ring to me. I heard missionaries talk about learning to identify with the nationals, with the people to whom you go. I thought it was a wonderful idea. You become an Indian. You become a Chinese, as Hudson Taylor did. He wore the gown and the queue and the Chinese shoes. He spoke Chinese. I wanted to become an Indian. I did not wear an Alka Indian costume. I did wear a Quechua Indian costume. But when it came to identification, I had to draw the line when it came to the Alka costume, since that consisted of a piece of string. I mean, only a piece of string. After living there for a few months, I had learned enough of the language to ask the usual stupid question that you would have asked, I'm sure. Why do you wear that string? You know what they said? Well, you certainly wouldn't expect us to go around naked, would you? So I could see that identification had its advantages, it had its limits. I couldn't do all the things that the Alka women did. I couldn't do most of them, in fact. Couldn't catch fish with my hands, couldn't weave hammocks or make pots. I was really retarded as far as the Indians could see. But I wanted to follow the Lord. I wanted to do what he wanted me to do without giving way to the things that bugged me. One of the things that I loved was the quiet, the peace, the simplicity of life. There were things about it that were very simple. You didn't have to make choices about what you were going to wear. You never had to worry about your hairdo. You didn't have to decide where you were going that day. You weren't going anyplace. It was simple in that way, but it wasn't necessarily simple to take care of my daughter, to see that she was properly nourished, to deal with the various little injuries and things that happened to her. She got jungle rot on her feet. She got ringworm in her hair. She got parasites. And cooking was not necessarily simpler than it would be on a stove. But I read in Philippians 2 that of Jesus, that the divine nature was his from the first, yet he did not think to snatch at equality with God, but made himself nothing. Another translation says, stripped himself of all privilege. Stripped himself of all privilege. Assuming the nature of a slave, bearing the human likeness, revealed in human shape, he humbled himself, and in obedience, accepted even death. Often in the smallest hidden matters of the heart's attitude, it is that the deepest spiritual tests are given to us, and the reality of the spiritual life is revealed in those small hidden matters of the heart. Who of those who knew Jesus here on earth had any idea of the sacrifice that he had made? He whose nature was divine, he who was in fact God, did not think to snatch at equality with God, but stripped himself of all privilege. And I find it difficult, inconvenient, not to my taste, to have to strip myself of even the smallest civilized privilege. What are the conditions of your life today in which God may be testing you in the small and hidden matters of your heart's attitude? Is it conditions at work, the office that you've got, the desk that you have, the computer that you have, the people you have to work with? Is it in the home? You don't have the conveniences that your next-door neighbor has. Maybe you don't have a microwave and somebody else does. You don't have that full-length mink coat that your friend has gotten for Christmas. It's in the hidden matters of the heart that the deepest spiritual tests are given. Will I accept even this as a part of the way appointed? The bugs were what bugged me most in the jungle. But I had to accept it as a part of the way appointed. No very big deal, really. And yet the sort of thing which tests the reality and the validity of our commitment to Jesus Christ. A dear lady sent me some money for screens on my house. Well, of course, I couldn't put screens, even if somebody had sent me the screens. I wouldn't have been able to staple them to the ironwood posts. You can't even drive a railroad spike into those ironwood posts. Amy Carmichael wrote, "The stamp of the saint is not the metallic wrapping out of a testimony to sanctification, but the true humility which shows the fierce purity of God in ordinary human flesh." My flesh was subject to gnats, jungle rot, scabies, ringworm, boils, carbuncles, nettles, caterpillar stings, wasps, fungus, thorns. All of them small things, none of them fatal by any means. But I was reminded again and again that the true humility shows itself in the fierce purity of God in ordinary human flesh. Jesus says, God says, "My grace is all you need." What is your consciousness of being in the flesh today? Maybe it's illness. Maybe it's overweight. Aging? Are you getting old as I am? Heat? Cold? Remember, Jesus Christ stripped himself of all privilege. He offered himself to God.
As Elizabeth has said, anything if offered to God can and will become your gateway to joy. Elizabeth Elliott has been sharing timeless truth with ladies for many years, drawing insight from her Bible study and her experiences as a wife, mother, and missionary. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network, Charlotte, North Carolina.